welcome back to What Lies Beneath. Sorry, guys, we took a week off there. Christian, he had to travel to New York, and he was apartment hunting. And I've been looking for houses and stuff too. And surprisingly enough, tonight we actually closed on it. So pretty exciting news there. So that's why we skipped last week. We didn't want to produce something of bad quality for you guys. We wanted to be able to do our proper research, which is, 2 hours before the show. So
pressure makes diamonds.
Exactly, man. We had a couple of reviews last week, and only one of them left a review where I can actually see who it is, and the other people I can't see. So shout out to Kat Vulcan. Thank you for the review. One thing that I did find out is if you are not in America when you leave a review or whatever, if you're from a different country, we don't see those reviews for some reason. Apple's a piece of shit. So if you did leave a review or whatever and you've been wondering why the hell you haven't gotten a sticker or anything, screenshot it and send it to us on Instagram. Finally did get the stickers in. I know I keep saying that, but I actually have them this time. And I'll get those out to you as soon as possible. Planning for a wedding and stuff now, right now too.
Well, isn't Canada just like U.S. North and Mexico just U.S. South?
Yeah, pretty much. So I don't know why their reviews don't count for us.
I call bullshit.
Yeah, same, dude. It's probably because Trump built a wall or some shit. I don't know. It's funny. I was actually talking to a guy before the show on Instagram. We had a pretty good conversation. I was asking him how we can improve, and he said he loved the show and stuff. So shout out to you, man. You'll know who you are when you hear this episode. And again, I just wanted to reiterate, if you guys, if you have anything you'd ever want to talk about or whatever, Christian and I are here for you. Just reach out. It doesn't have to be anything serious, or if it is serious, reach out. We'll do our best. But at the end of the day, we're just two dudes having a good time. But anyways, we'll get into the topic for the week. So I'm going to let Christian get us started, because this one's right up his wheelhouse. It's kind of involved with the Nazis and the Jews a little bit. So the Holocaust in a way, but it's a little bit, it's not exactly that. So it's not going to be about Hitler. It's going to be about a specific kind of regiment in the actual German army that's separated from the rest, and not necessarily one that everyone really liked. They did a lot of brutal shit, but I'm gonna let Christian get us rolling on that. So go ahead, man.
The infallible filler here. Er heißt Oskar Delavanga.
All right, say that in English terms now.
So, man by the name of Oskar Delavanga. Dirlewanger. Words really don't materialize very well when I think about them as letters. So I hopefully I spelled that right.
Yeah, you did.
Anyway, this individual is rather conspicuous and infamous. And believe me, I've done extensive research, completely amateur, on Germany during World War II. And I only learned of his atrocities up until recently. I'd say within the last few weeks, or the magnitude, and it's absolutely disturbing. And I can't believe they were committed. But the intro to Oskar Delavanger, I will start with the background. World War II, during the years of 1939 and 1945, Germany, Italy, and Japan were the enemy, and of course, France, Britain, U.S., other minor allies were all belligerents during that time period. But the whole premise of World War II is that the Western allies and the Soviet Union were fighting the good fight. And that's completely vindicated, especially upon the entry into Germany and some of the occupied territories throughout the 1940s. 6 million Jews perished at the hands of the Nazis, and it wasn't exclusively Jews. In fact, I think I saw an estimate somewhere that you can double that, and that's the total civilian casualties inflicted by the Nazis during that time period.
That's insane.
But what German actually perpetrated these crimes? What type of German? And to discuss that, it's what is required to execute somebody. It really does not require elite frontline troops that could be dedicated into conquering foreign territories or defending your own. It requires somebody that can pull a trigger, light a match, march people to a gas chamber, etc.
Yeah, very, very sadistic type of a person. So when I say sadistic, I mean somebody who they get pleasure out of seeing somebody else suffer. So that, I mean, that's the type of people that we're dealing
with. Not even that. Not even that, Trevor. It's scary to say. Not even that. A lot of the penal battalions and the worst atrocities of World War II were committed east of the German border. So Poland, Ukraine, Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, Hungary, and Western Russia. Rather than the German army devoting 18 to 25-year-olds and adept officers to the final solution, they decided that middle-aged men and delinquents would be sufficient for carrying out their policing in occupied territories. So these units were raised, and what's incredible is, from what I've read, is that the spring of 1942, after the final solution was devised between German officials, Nazi officials, half or only a quarter of the Jews to perish during the Holocaust were killed. Now, take you a year later, the spring of 1943, only a quarter of the Jews to be killed, murdered within the Holocaust were left to be killed. So that means 3 million people were killed in between the spring of 1942 and 1943.
Jesus.
But anyway, I digress.
Yeah. So do you want to go ahead.
So yeah, I'll get into Oscar Durlevanger. So this man born, I think he was, he was probably born in the late 19th century.
Yeah.
1890 something, whatever the hell it is. And man, when this guy came out of the womb, you had to know he was a crazy bastard. Somebody capable of just indiscriminate harm. And nothing really resonated history-wise until he entered service in World War I with a Württemberg regiment, which I believe is in southern Germany. So in World War I, you were known to be with a regional unit, like a National Guard. So it's an Illinois National Guard, a California National Guard. Germany had the same organizational structure where you entered a regiment with individuals from your own region. But anyway, he was distinguished in World War I, received a few awards, and recognized that German nationalism was the way to go. So much that he entered what they called the Freikorps after World War I, after Germany surrendered. And I will interject this because I think it's an interesting fact.
Yeah.
No ounce of German territory was occupied by the Western Allies in World War I for the surrender. Germany, in fact, had territory in France and Belgium and the Netherlands when they surrendered. So they had more territory than their actual Western border. The reason they surrendered is because there was a revolution transpiring inside Germany against the communists and the conservatives, monarchists, whomever you want to call them. But anyway, Durlevanger entered the Freikorps, which would counter these these factions inside Germany and quash the rebellion. So he had a taste for glory in World War One, and then nationalism by quashing the rebellion, and gained a lot of national pride because of that. Now, there was an immense hatred because Germans were very prideful at the time, and that was evacuated from them with the armistice. So he decided to go into political science at whatever university. I think it was Citizens College or Citizens University, where the hell it's called.
Yes.
Yeah, actually graduated. This man, as unstable as he was able to graduate. Now, his tendencies as a violent alcoholic became known in the late 20s and early 30s. He was able to join the Nazi Party for his unabashed and fervent hatred of Jews and communists and his allegiance towards Germany. However, even that, even his fiery allegiance towards the Nazi Party could not fight against his accusations of a statutory rape of a 14-year-old and other events that definitely harmed his reputation. So he was interned in a concentration camp in the early 30s. But he had demonstrated himself as a worthy member of the cause throughout the 20s and met this man by the name of Gottlob Berger, who had attained a powerful rank inside the newly developed Waffen-SS. Or not the Waffen-SS, just the SS in general, which I think you know about. You should know about the SS.
Can you explain the SS a little bit? Maybe some people, I mean, for me, I was kind of confused because it seemed like everything was like the SS. Is the SS like the overall like military, and then there's branches inside of the SS or something?
So the Nazi Party stemmed from a group called the SA, or no, excuse me, the NSDAP. So Hitler actually joined a founded Nazi party, the Nationalsozialistische Deutsche Abwehrpartei. And then from there, he created a very radical right-wing, white ring quotation mark movement that was heavily anti-Semitic. Then he created an armed wing called the Sturmabteilung, the SA, the brown shirts,
okay,
in the early 30s. And that sort of got... So it's a paramilitary arm, and that became very powerful. But they started to become more idealistic and less loyal to Hitler. And then a second arm came up in the 30s that was a subsection of the SA called the SS, the Schutzstaffel, which was intended to be Hitler's home guard, Hitler's security staff.
Okay.
And in the mid-30s, when it was recognized that the SA was becoming too powerful, the SS, Hitler had the SS overthrow the SA leaders, and then the SS was the security detachment, but later had a military arm that actually fought in combat on the Eastern and Western Front and provided other security detachments as well as penal battalions in the occupied territories. So that's what the SS constituted as. And Heinrich Himmler, if you speak about the SS, Heinrich Himmler is the top guy, completely sadistic, and just blindly ambitious, and many people had to perish at the hands of his ambition. But anyway, so that's the SS. So Oscar had a friend inside the upper echelons of the SS and all in basically the headquarters staff of Heinrich Himmler, that he appealed to this friend in order to have him released, and he would immediately join the Condor Legion. The Condor Legion, so in the late 30s, from 1936 to 1939, the Spanish Civil War was transpiring. So it was Republicans against communists, and any war against the communists, the Nazis wanted to be a part of. So did the fascist Italians. So the Germans and the Italians both sent troops down to Spain to fight against the communists. And that's where a lot of the tactics were developed for the Blitzkrieg, and certain bombers were displayed. But anyway, he showed distinction down in Spain, or at least performed well. and sort of exonerated himself, but he still had to come back to the consequences of his previous crimes. But by this time, it was 1939. The outbreak of war was impending against Poland, and he found himself as a sergeant inside of the Waffen-SS, which is the military arm of the Schutzstaffel, and showed distinction in Poland. And after that, there was a proposal that inside these occupied territories, there were going to be a significant amount of Jews. And the Nazis were intending to dispose of the Jews immediately upon conquering the territory. Also, there was twofold plan. Not only did they were they intending to dispose of the Jews, but they wanted to clear the area, the Lebensraum, where they wanted to expand the Germanic race. They had to clear it of Polish too. Even though the Poles didn't wrong them, the Polish were going to inhibit the resources that could be distributed to actual Germans. So not only the Jews, but the Poles were going to be eradicated or enslaved. So the penal unit Der Lavanger was devised in 1940, and the whole premise was that it was going to be a penal battalion constructed of minor criminals, men who were convicted of poaching but did not set traps. So very particular. It was well devised, well constructed. And there was some honor in developing and caution in developing this penal battalion. So poachers who did not set traps, it was a philosophical endeavor stating that these were men who were like the old German Jaeger hunters that instituted their own knowledge in order to trap game, and just out of their bravery and courage to break the law, were caught poaching, things like that. And these were in order to eradicate the local population as well as kill partisans and quash.
If you really think about it, dude, like these people, these poachers, I mean, it was honestly kind of a smart move, like recruiting them, because you know they're good at poaching or whatever. So they obviously, their knowledge of hunting and, you know, woodworking skills and just skills, like, you know, as far as in battle, I feel like those kind of tie together in a way. I don't know. That's kind of a thought that I had on that, but
precisely. No, I totally agree with that. So it's logical. These are minor crimes, and in time of war, your manpower is going to be dwindling. So why not allow these men who've made a mistake have the chance of exonerating themselves through glorious action?
Yeah, I mean, I know poaching's like a, you know, pretty bad crime, but as far as like in those days, you know, especially like what you're saying, a lot of casualties, a crime like this is nothing compared to what they let in, you know, down the road, which we'll cover here soon too. And it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. It's freaking insane.
So yes, the unit was mobilized in 1940. One of its first assignments. So they were trained throughout 1940. There were, I don't know, maybe 100 men sent to a development unit.
Yeah, there were 80 men.
80 men, and then only 50, 60 were used in order to, 55 were sent back. I can't remember.
Yeah, 55 were sent back. So that means only 25 were actually kept. So the thing about it, like these people, they're like, oh shit, we get a second chance, you know? And then 2 months down the road, oh, JK, you're going back to prison. Like, how shitty would that be?
So yeah, so not only are they performing a task that's integral to Nazi Germany, which at the time a lot of people considered to be glorified, they were also trying to vindicate themselves of crimes. And so they had, it was twofold. And they were disorganized because they didn't have any rank structure. It wasn't a regular military unit. They were just looked as criminals performing a task. It's essentially a chain gang with a bunch of rifles. and you have a group with submachine guns just overseeing them, making sure they're performing their tasks. But their first major action, and I think the unit was bolstered by this point, was their efforts were enlisted in the eradication of Lublin, Poland. So this was a territory deemed in Poland that was going to be part of Lebensraum. So all civilians had to be evacuated, quotation marks, evacuated. In Lublin, there were, so they had 300 men at this point in their unit, and they were sent to Lublin to deal with the population. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, and I wanted to say one thing real fast before we move on with this part of it, because I think this definitely is probably the reason why it was they were A-OK with it. So, you know, they had these poachers in their, you know, in their regiment. And, you know, shortly after, you know, they got criticized a little bit about it because, you know, these once criminals are now OK to bear arms, and, you know, they were kind of receiving a lot of heat from it. But, you know, they realized, oh, shit, we need men. So, you know, they still recruited, and then they eventually got put under a different command, which, you know, they basically okayed it for these people to recruit other sadistic criminals who were responsible. You know, some of the crimes that they committed were rape, arson, burglary, and other shit like that. So these people are, you know, they were bad men, and you know, they basically were clear of their crimes to go and help this force. And I just want to point that out real fast, because it's what they did at Lublin is just like, man, it makes me like, I don't know, scared almost to even think about it, that someone could be like this insane in order to commit something like this. But I'll let you go ahead.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrifying that they had no conscience. And if they did, they completely ignored it and perpetrate these crimes. And in Lublin, it was already known. So I believe that that within the SS, and when the SS tolerated a considerable amount in regards to heinous actions. That's just the name of the game. That was their, they were hardliners, and they thought Germany was pure, and anything that was required in order to further their territory and provide Lebensraum was required. But even still, I mean, it was recorded, like Trevor said, that it, the information traveled throughout the ranks that they would rape, pillage, and extort any community that they encountered, things like that. So when it's when someone inside the infamous SS is stating that, you know it's serious.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy about it is Der Lavanger, he's the one who provided these guys, you know, the opportunity to commit like such crimes that even, you know, some of the upper, you know, SS executioners, so people who are, you know, in the military to execute people, like they deemed evil. And they were oftentimes described, one of the things that I found, they called them terrifying rabble of cutthroats, renegades, sadistic morons, and cashiered rejects. And there was one other thing. Oh, yeah, I had a point that I found, and I didn't find this. It was just kind of a thing that made me think about it, you know. So they were placed under the new command, and the command that I mentioned before, they were responsible for the administration of the concentration camp. So my question, I guess, to you, Christian, maybe you probably know this. So was it due to Durlanger's, was it his you know, crew or unit, were they responsible for like the concentration camps? Like, was it them that was, you know, made these awful places for the Jews to go to, or was it like something that was already set up before them?
So my question is, what location and what year are you referring to?
That's a good question.
Because I think what could have occurred is that, I doubt it. Because I think the Der Lavanger unit, unless it was just a ridiculous amount of people, would have disposed of them personally. But it could have been the case that the Derlewanger unit captured a particular amount of people and transferred them to a concentration camp.
Quite possibly. I mean, it makes sense that, you know, if they didn't start it, then they definitely ran one at some point or whatever, because just some of the shit that they did, and like, it just feels like they have no remorse for any of their actions. Like, it's almost like they're having a blast doing it. And it's just, it's
yes. Yeah. That's the impression. That's the impression I get, is that it was just unabashed debauchery and heinous acts.
Yeah. And then I saw that in 1942, the unit was then authorized to recruit Russian and Ukrainian volunteers. And then by 1943, the unit doubled to 700. So now in 1943, there's 700 of these crazy bastards.
Just roaming the countryside with fully automatic weapons, encountering civilians that may have a butter knife.
Yeah, or encountering civilians. I mean, obviously none of them did anything wrong, but, you know, they're civilians. Like, they literally, you know, they're just like you and I were having a normal day, and then someone shows up around the corner and fucking blasts you with a machine gun. I mean, there was no rhyme or reason. These people were just insane. But I think let's move on with Lublin. I know we brought that up a little bit ago. I think we got some information now that'll kind of clear up on some of the, I don't know, it doesn't make it okay, but it kind of, it shows you why they may have done it or what kind of led them to do it.
No, throughout the course of history, I think the Germans always looked disapprovingly on to their eastern borders, or people beyond their eastern borders. And this was exacerbated by the Treaty of Versailles in World War I. The Treaty of Versailles had created the Polish corridor, which isolated a significant amount of Germany, East Prussia, and Prussia itself was a hotbed for German just politics and military institutions, etc. And also, it shrunk the eastern boundary considerably after the Treaty of Versailles. So this hatred toward, and Russia also is the epitome of communism. Germans hated the fact that they were humiliated in World War I and that the communists were to their east. So this indiscriminate killing, although not vindicated, was definitely provoked by such thoughts against communism and the Polish. And then they moved on to the Belarus region, which would have been farther east.
So did we, I don't think we touched on what they actually did at Lublin, though.
I'll let you explain if you have any other information, Trevor.
I'll explain some of the shit that they did, and then I'll let you move into the next one that you were about to go to. So, okay, yeah. So in around the time of like Lublin or whatever, and Christian may have mentioned this, but you know, Derlewanger's unit, you know, they were full of corruption, obviously. And rape was something that was just like on the daily for them. So, you know, everywhere they went, they pillaged, and they raped, you know, civilians who were innocent. You know, they beat up people, they stole shit. I mean, just inhumane stuff. And now, Belarus, I'll let Christian continue with that. This is the one that kind of just, I don't know, it's off the rails on this one, I think.
So Belarus was an area not deep into Russian territory, but it was heavily Soviet influenced and was sympathetic to the Soviet cause, whereas Ukraine was not necessarily sympathetic to the Soviet cause. I digress. Anyway, so that means that there were significant factions that were dedicated to the communist cause, and that resulted in a partisan. When I say partisan, it's a resistance fighter. Okay, that's just, a partisan is used interchangeably with resistance fighter, but it's usually described or attributed to someone on the Eastern Front who's a resistance fighter.
So when they use that term, like, so is that sort of like a made up thing? Like, were they actually Like, did they actually have a legit reason for trying to kill, you know, quote unquote partisans? Or is that something that they like made up to kind of make an excuse for killing them?
No. Partisans were a great hindrance, because you have to think about it, in the German invasion, you're covering massive tracts of land. I'm talking about hundreds of miles, and logistical lines, railroads, roads, bridges, and anything that sabotage is going to hinder the eastward movement. Because not only do you have to fight the forces on the front, but you have to reinforce your forces and supply them adequately with ammunition and various other rations and things of that matter. So any blown bridge, any rail line that's been tampered with is going to greatly inhibit the forward movement of resources. And the partisans were a great facilitator of that. And the partisans operated with heavily and way behind enemy lines. And the Soviets were very good in supplying them. And they had Molotov cocktails. They had PPSHs. They had submachine guns, rifles, ammunition, anything you could imagine in order to continue the effort against the Nazis. Where was I going with this?
I don't know, but I remember a time when you and I made some of those Molotov cocktails. That was badass.
It tasted good, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think if we would have drank that, we may not be on this podcast today. So in Belarus, I'll get into some of the killings that went on here. And I think it's coined the Warsaw Massacre, or the Wola, or Vola. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Do we want to get to that portion yet?
Are we not there yet?
Yeah, so
you can continue.
No great mass murderer starts off soft. When I say great, I mean absurd, ridiculous.
Something that goes down in history.
Yeah. And they made a name for themselves in Belarus. If there was mumbling within the ranks of the SS about Lublin, after Belarus, there were courts that were developed and generated in order to investigate the actions of the Derlewanger Brigade in Belarus. And if the Germans did not like the Poles, who were in Central Europe, they definitely did not like civilians in Eastern Europe, such as Belarus, which were considered Russians, essentially. And for them to devote that effort in investigating atrocities against these people means that's how terrible some of the atrocities were that Derlewanger perpetrated. So anyway, and what did I read? There was a term called harvesting. So the Germans were very well organized, very systematic, or at least attempted to be systematic. And paperwork and documentation was an essential tier of their conduct. So this is the report. Derlewanger reported taking, quotation marks, 33 bunkers, killed 386 bandits, which I don't know what the German translation for bandit is, and finished off 294 bandit suspects. Now, I don't think finished off means a happy ending.
I wish it was that kind.
Additionally, they, quotation mark, harvested 3 men, 30 women, 117 horses, 248 children, 140 sheep, 14 pigs, and 120 tons of food. So I have to believe they consumed the horses, sheep, pigs, and 120 tons of food, or used them to their various uses. But as for the actual men, women, and children, I think harvested was a euphemism, and it's rather disturbing that was actually in military documentation and that was accepted. And this is what occurred in Belarus. And one of the preferred methods of eradication of these populations is they would take, quotation mark, bandits, throw them into a barn, pack them in as deep as possible, set it afire, have their men standing outside, and anyone who decided The fire was too hot, which I would say is the majority. They were shot. But yeah, that's how demented these individuals were, and such the extent that they wanted to reserve ammunition. That was one of the major catalysts for them to come up with these rather morbid methods. Is shooting people is face to face, and it wastes ammunition. Why not burn them? Why not come up with an alternative method? It's horrific. But that's Belarus. Trevor, I'll let you interject with a few statements here, man.
Yeah. So after this, the regiment, they were committed to frontline action with their Army Group Center. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, actually, but
it is Army Group Center.
Okay. Yeah. An attempt to basically halt the Soviet advance. So from my understanding, this group was sent to sort of stop Derlevanger's group. Is that accurate?
That's incorrect.
Incorrect. So they were together. They're working together.
So yeah. So the Battle of Stalingrad was transpiring during this time, and the German line was basically buckling under the collapse of the group at Stalingrad. And penal units were there to offer rearguard actions in order for top-of-the-line panzer units, SS units, to retreat and find a better defensive position. Anyway, that's my take.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Christian is obviously the more extensive knowledge in World War II. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think about that, what they did to those people, man. Like, could you imagine going to the actual place before it happened? Obviously, the buildings and stuff aren't there, but I just feel like, I don't know, just like the atmosphere. I feel like it'd be so heavy and dark. I don't know, it'd be very interesting. Like, I want to go. Obviously, I don't know how safe it is over there, but I think it'd be really, really cool and fascinating to go and do like a ghost tour or something in some of these places. I hear a lot of stories about the Holocaust and stuff, and I've heard some paranormal stuff about it, but I don't know. I just think it'd be really sweet. I'll let you continue. We're getting close to the massacre that I was talking about earlier, and that one's insane too, though.
Yeah, I feel like you have some significant knowledge on that, so I'll let you chime in whenever. So the development. So after the Battle of Stalingrad, the German line on the Eastern Front was quickly deteriorating. There was one attempt at a counteroffensive in 1943 in Kursk. That was failed. And then the Germans slowly retreated west. And finally, in August of 1944, the Soviets were encroaching upon German territories. They hadn't quite reached the Polish border yet, or maybe they had, but they had not reached Warsaw. And with great support from Britain and the Western Allies, here's the thing. So not only were the Western Allies fighting the Germans or the Soviets fighting the Germans, the Western Allies recognized that post-war Europe would consist of, they knew time was numbered. Germany could not sustain a war against both sides. That's just plain and simple. And they knew that post-war Europe would exist without Germany, but post-war Europe would exist with the Soviet Union against Britain, France, and the U.S. So they did not want the communist Russia to have vast control over Europe, because that would be bad for the Western Allies, hence the Cold War. So in August of 1944, there was a group in Warsaw, and I don't know if they were called the Republican Guard or whatever they were, but it was the Warsaw Uprising. They had accumulated enough munitions, firearms, ammunition, resources in order to counter the German occupation forces. And this was a wholly conservative, monarchist, Republican type army. It was definitely not pro-communist. and the British were trying to reinforce this unit as much as possible. That's tough to do because they were completely behind enemy lines. So they decided to rebel against their Nazi occupiers. And essentially, the Nazi hierarchy said, to hell with them. They were going to burn Warsaw to the ground in order to quash this rebellion. And that's exactly what they did. They employed the Derlewanger Battalion as well as the Rheinfahrt. Rheinfahrt, that, you know.
Same thing. Sounds,
two different units in order to commit the greatest atrocities against the Polish during the war, at least in my regard.
Yeah, and I would have to agree.
And Trevor, I believe you've got some information on this, and I think you got an itchy trigger finger here, so I'll let you fire away, man.
Yeah, I can cover some of the you know, atrocities that he's talking about during this event, and then I'll let you continue. So Himmler, he gave the orders that okayed Derlewanger's unit to freely rape, loot, torture, and butcher in Warsaw. So much like before, you know, they're reigning around, you know, these towns, raping whoever they want, children, women, men, doesn't matter. You know, they had it out for anybody who walked and breathed, basically. And so
indiscriminate too.
Yeah. Indiscriminate. Yeah. I mean, they didn't care what you were. They were going to rape you basically. And it's so terrible that I'm laughing at it, but,
Oh, no, it's absurd. You're laughing at it because it's so absurd. You can't believe you're actually rattling off those words in a coherent sentence.
Exactly. Like, just, I can't even fathom, like, oh, man, I'm not even going to go there. But so anyways, this is known as the Wola Massacre. So Kaminsky and Derlewanger personnel, they massacred Polish combatants along with civilian men, women, and children in the Wola district. So that's where the term Wola comes from. They murdered 40,000 people in their reign of terror in less than 2 weeks. And I think this was back in August at that time. I think, I forget what Christian said, sometime in the 40s. And that is including all hospital patients and staff. So if they injured somebody and they escaped, whatever, they weren't able to go to a hospital because they were all dead there as well. So, and then another incident that I think is probably the most fucked up is it was later revealed that Derlewanger, he blew the doors off of a daycare. And inside it was, a packed house of kids with their hands up in the air. And you know, they were surrendering, like, you know, hey, we're here, like, don't kill us. And he ordered his men to kill them all, and the shots were fired. And like Christian said, they were trying to reserve ammo. So instead of continuing to fire away at these children, they used the butts of their rifles and the bayonets to kill the rest of them. So yeah, I mean, he killed 500 children, just innocent children in a daycare. Like, that's so fucked up. And
you know what, Trevor? I'm just sitting here and I just can't fathom. I absolutely just can't fathom how a single group, just a single faction of people could execute so many people.
I know. I'm like, you know, I don't know. It's like, do you think they felt any remorse at all? Or do you think it's like they become numb to the feeling? Like, once they do it, you know, 1, 2, 10, you know, 20 times, it just becomes numb.
I think that occurred for the vast majority, but I think for the Derlewanger detachment, I think it was innate. I think it was just instinct.
Yeah, I mean, it's freaking, it's wild for sure. This is another place I'd really like to go to and tour. Like 100%, there's got to be activity in these places. And I think today it's still deserted. I looked up some information around the place to see if I could find any paranormal stuff. There really wasn't any. I didn't do a ton of research on it, but I couldn't find a lot. But I think they tried to industrialize it down the line. They ended up not going through with that, and it's still deserted, I believe, to this day. And it's kind of it's kind of left as it was. I don't think they've really done any renovations, or they haven't tried to fix it up at all. I think it's still, it's a ghost town, basically. I just think the feeling going through this place would be heavy as hell, man. I would love, Christian and I know he could second that notion. I feel like he would love to go there too. I mean, for the history too. I know Christian. Yeah. Sign Christian's a big history buff. So that's why he's taking this one over. But yeah, I just think that's super freaking, it'd be so fun to go there. But anyways, we'll finish up with the story. I don't think there's a ton left, but I'll let Christian go ahead and finish this off here.
So yeah, just Trevor mentioned the major atrocity is the daycare. I don't know if that's true. It sounds like it. I've heard it from several sources. But if anything else, that Durlavanger Brigade definitely executed a massive amount, triple, quadruple, five times the amount of their actual regiment, the complement of the regiment.
I want to say that I...
In World War II.
Yeah.
And the 15,000, 30,000, I don't know how much it is. 5,000 is a lot. 2,000 is a lot.
Shit, man. Just civilians, too. Even like 100 is a lot. But I heard that, or I read somewhere that it was... that the casualties that their unit committed was like 120,000 or more, or something stupid like that. Something insane. I might be way off, but in thousands, it's just, all right, go ahead.
So anyway, the German Empire was crumbling. The Third Reich was crumbling very quickly, very rapidly in 1944, 1945. And the Durlavanger Brigade, as it was employed in the rear guard action of the Army Group Center campaign in Stalingrad, they were employed elsewhere in the eastern regions of Berlin. So I don't know if it's 50 or 100 or 300 miles east of Berlin. But anyway, they were tasked with defending those positions on the high grounds against the Soviets in order to delay advances into Berlin, and their unit was just decimated. Durlavanger, he was crazy. He was a terrible person, probably the most evil person I've read about. Well, there's one more that's worse, but anyway, that's another story.
Do you think he was inspired by Hitler? Mm. Or, do you know what I'm trying to say? Or do you think he acted?
Durlavanger was inspired by Hitler.
He act like no. Totally alone. No. Was he opposite of Hitler? Like he was against Hitler?
No. But if Hitler met Durlavanger, they would not have gotten along.
Just because that they kind of had the same, I don't know, overpowering like personality or whatever. Or why do you say that?
That, but Hitler was a philosopher and an intellectual, whereas Durlavanger was a brute, if that makes sense. Anyway, so they fought serious rear guard actions. Durlavanger was actually brave in combat for how evil he was. He had no disregard for his own well-being and led various assaults on enemy positions and definitely did not have any regard for his men. But led them in several actions and became wounded and sent to the rear in order to recuperate while his unit was decimated in frontline combat with many actions against the Soviets in World War II. And later on, he was captured by the Free French and incarcerated, or was a captive. And it's reported that he was killed or died from abuse.
Yeah, it wasn't much long after that
which he got
captured.
Very ambiguous. Very ambiguous.
I feel like he deserved a slow death.
He did, but because of the non-concrete evidence of his death, who knows if he somehow survived. He was within German territory, and A lot of people were escaping in the late 40s to South America. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
He had to be thinking of an exit route, exit strategy.
I mean, it's crazy and mentally, you know, disability. I don't know what the right term is. I mean, he's just a psycho, but as crazy as he was, you know, he was pretty smart if you think about it too. I mean, he was in jail basically, and he was in a concentration camp. He got power.
Exactly. You're right. He knew how to work the system in order to maintain his power. Yeah, like, he did.
He had friends in high places that, you know, in turn helped him get power, and then boom, that's when it all started. I mean, he's a smart guy for having the crazy mental disorders that he has, which I'm not even sure what they are, but I mean, definitely had to have had something wrong with him up there. Some screw was loose. Who knows?
It's terrifying if he didn't.
Yeah, if he was a completely sane person. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't think he can be to commit some of the shit that he did. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty well it, guys. It's pretty well the Derlevanger Brigade.
That's a pretty heavy. That is real heavy, man. Let me tell you.
That is heavy.
Hopefully, rattling off that information, I am physically drained. I really am.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, dude, I mean, as you guys can tell, he knows his shit. So if you have any more questions about anything World War II or about this topic, definitely reach out. He would talk your ear off. So, but anyways, we do appreciate all of you guys. I think we have just peaked over 6,000 now. So, downloads total. So we do appreciate that. And, again, reach out to us if you ever want to communicate.
Oh, I have to relay one more story, and it's just so disturbing, but I have to, because while we're on this subject, he would line up children, Jewish children, I think it was reported, maybe just Jews, it's still bad, and inject them with strict. Did you read that?
Oh shit. Yeah, dude, I forgot about that story. I'm glad you brought that
because
up.
Because we have to cover that.
Strychnine or something like that.
Yeah, it's like a nerve agent. They foam at the mouth and they
used it to kill birds. They used it to kill like rodents, like rats and like crows and shit like that.
And this was entertainment. This served as entertainment for them.
Yeah, this kind of goes to show you, like, it's like the icing on the cake for this guy. Yeah, dude, I totally forgot about that. That was something I had in my notes that I was going to bring up, because I thought that was like, you know, out of all the inhumane shit he did, I mean, that's up there too.
We cannot end on that note. So what I'm just going to say is that throughout my research, it's terrifying to note. Yes, the Derlevanger Brigade was terrible, and I think they were conceived from pure evil. But a lot of the actions committed within the Holocaust were by mundane and lackluster individuals, normal people, put in an environment where their productivity was measured by the extermination, quotation mark, of a particular population. And it's just terrifying to know that how normal people could do that. It's just important that we remain vigilant and that we understand the consequences of our actions and everything we do.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think one reason too, why some of these people, we're so keen on doing this like over and over and over, is because it was either do it or be killed. So I think, I mean,
it wasn't do it or be killed. You could easily be reassigned. No, in these units, you could have been reassigned. Okay. It would have been disgraceful. The thing about the Germans is, so field marshals, which is a particular rank in the German army, if you lost in a battle and surrendered, you were expected unwritten to commit suicide, to shoot yourself, right? It's like a captain going down with the ship, shit like that. They were very prideful. it would have been something for them to resign their position because they couldn't handle it. But in the same token, you can't rationalize the killing of this magnitude to their pride. Yeah.
I'm not saying that I'm not trying to like say that it was okay in any regards. I was just trying to make a point, like, you know, maybe some of them were possibly held under sort of like, you know, some sort of force. But yeah, like you said, some of them, I guess, did have the choice, but they made the wrong choice, obviously.
But anyway, this has been real heavy, and I guarantee that in the ensuing weeks, it will be dedicated to the paranormal. Yeah, dude,
Halloween's coming up.
So we wanted to throw a little curveball to you right now, and just food for thought. But now it's Halloween time. We got the heavy subject down. We got you grounded. Now it's time to have fun. It'll be similar to Limp Mansion. Limp Mansion, I enjoyed that episode. I believe our delivery was good. And I know that's rather pretentious, but I'm just going to say it. And I really hope you enjoyed that episode because we saw it firsthand. We didn't necessarily get to go inside, but I enjoyed it. And that's the whole point we're doing. We're having this podcast is Trevor and I, that was the most fun I had within a podcast. I thought we meshed well. And, yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I had fun. I need to go.
Here we go. Let's pose this to our listeners. So how many weeks are there before Halloween?
I'm not even sure. What are we at? September.
Let me pull out my phone.
September 6th. Like 7 weeks, 6 weeks.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Well, real fast on the Limp Mansion episode, I listened to it again. And I just realized for some reason the audio is kind of funky. So if you listen to it through like headphones or whatever, like one of our voices will come through one ear and then the other one comes through the other one. So I need to go in and fix that. So if you.
No, I like that effect.
I didn't mean for it to happen. So
there's a mystique to it. You know, it was subconscious. You did intend to do that. It was your subconscious.
I really didn't. It's probably because I had a couple beers beforehand and I didn't know what I was doing with the audio. Oh man,
that was some day drinking right there. That I totally want to open a tavern down in those caves.
You know.
The cavern tavern.
I feel like the end goal for you and I is to have our own like brewery, not like something humongous, but just like something small with a restaurant in it. And then if
our audience purchases enough stickers, then we can actually fund that endeavor.
Nah, dude, we're giving the stickers away for free if they give us a review. We're gonna have it to where they can go on and get some shirts and stuff soon. I have all the logos and stuff set up for that. It's just a matter of putting it up there, but.
Well, I just hope we charge the shit out of our audience so we can do it.
Yeah, right, bro.
Bruh. Where was I going with this? But anyway, so we have 6 weeks. Trevor and I can develop. We can generate topics rather easily. At the beginning, yeah, it was a smattering of various topics. Sort of eclectic, but... You know what? Let's see what the audience has for us. Just leave us a comment, hopefully a 5-star rating, and with whatever proposed subject you have. Well, Trevor, we'll just say it right now, we'll do listener's choice for the next 6 weeks. It has to be paranormal. It has to be within the Midwest.
Well, I would say it doesn't necessarily have to be, but if it is, that'd be great because I feel like there's a lot of Midwestern. Subjects that haven't been covered. So we don't,
and preferably with somewhere that Trevor can at least drive to look at it, because that means I could potentially come back and visit. I'll be in New York, but at least we could have someone on site to check it out.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, definitely what Christian's saying is good thing. I think that'd be cool. We want to interact with you guys as much as possible. So if you do have an idea, I think that's a great idea. Listener subject for the next 6 weeks leading up to Halloween. If you guys are okay with that, then send us over your topic ideas. But I think that about covers it.
That's it, man.
We'll see you guys next time. Peace out.